Mr. Tasky. The Antic Files. Episode 12.
Welcome to another episode of Inversitasky, The Antic Files. I'm your host, Wade, and this issue is number 12, which is volume 2, number 6, from September of 1983. The subject is computers and education. There were 112 pages cover to cover, and there are 60 advertisers. The price is $2.50 in the US and $3 in Canada. And let's get started. The cover for this issue has a purple background at the top, which fades into a deep spacescape. Midway down the page is a chalkboard. The chalkboard has the expression A plus B equals X on it. In front of the chalkboard is a chrome robot with a monitor for a head. There are several white 3D wireframe geometric shapes flowing out and to the right. The left hand of the robot is tossing a turtle in the air, which has a look of terror on its face. The right hand of the robot is holding a ruler. There's also a floppy disk, which appears to be landing in his hand. And in an arch in the air between the turtle and the floppy disk are the letter A and a globe. On the lower side is a pencil. Each of these objects have traces indicating that they are in a circular motion, as if they are being juggled. The robot has the Atari Fuji symbol in chrome and gold on its chest, and a smiling Pac-Man character over its left breastplate. At the bottom of the page are three people with clear globes over their heads, like helmets, watching the robot. The Antic logo is orange with a yellow shadow and appears at the top. In the top right corner, appearing diagonally, is a bright pink stripe with black text that reads, Computers in Education. The pricing is in the upper right in white, and the barcode appears in the lower left. As you can tell, the cover has a lot going on, and there are a couple things I left out. It's remarkably well done and worth a look. This issue's cover was done by Bud Thon, who started his career painting flames on cars and airbrushing sweatshirts, eventually becoming the art director for KPIX-TV in San Francisco Bay Area. After deciding to work for himself, he's done award-winning illustrations for clients such as Atari, Activision, Levi Strauss, Lucasfilms, RCA, and now Antic. There is not an editorial in this issue. I'm going to talk about some ads first. Computer Palace has a full-page monochrome ad. This is a retailer, and the ad doesn't focus on a single product. You can get Pole Position and Donkey Kong for $44.90 each. That's $136.54 today. Those are two games that I love. Pole Position at the arcade was what started my love for racing games and simulators. And Canyon Climber, which I talked about before, is on Super Special for only $15.95, which is $48.50 today. The Rana 1000 drive is advertised at $349, which is $1,061 today. And the thing that caught my eye is the welcome message in the center of the ad. Welcome to Computer Palace. There's a paragraph message and a picture of the staff.
There are a lot of mustaches in that photo.
Indeed. The paragraph reads, When you're in Eugene, Oregon, please visit our well-stocked store and talk with our experienced, helpful Atari experts. We have the largest selection of Atari software and hardware in the Northwest. We specialize in Atari, so we know what works best. Anyone listening to this that was in the Northwest, did you ever shop there? If so, let me know what it was like. Oh, and you can get a free catalog with any order. The next ad is from OSS, or Optimized System Software. This is a full-page, full-color ad for the Action programming language. At last, a revolutionary new language which dramatically alters the state of the art in programming tools. Action's incredible speed and remarkable versatility make it the most powerful tool ever for the Atari computers. Hundreds of times faster than BASIC?
Truth.
Interestingly, the cart pictured in the ad does not have the exclamation mark at the end of the word action. and the word is not in the curved script font. Mine was an orange cart, but a different label, probably a later version. The next ad is from Happy Computing, and it has a whole page monochrome ad for the Happy 810 enhancement and the Happy Warp Drive software. The 810 enhancement is a plug-in board that requires no permanent modifications. You need the hardware to run the Warp software. The Warp software has the Happy Backup program, which is guaranteed to back up any disk. Yeah, you know what this was used for. The ad gives some performance timings of the standard drive and with the enhancement. It's priced at $249.95, which is $760.09 today. Next up is an ad from Elite Digital. This is a tiny ad in the back for extra long Atari cables. It doesn't say SIO, but has a drawing of one of the ends. It touts gold-plated bifurcated contacts, foil-shielded cable for reliability, 4-foot links, and longer are available. There are no prices giving, and you can't call either. You have to write them. What is the maximum length of an SIO cable and the SIO chain in general? I'm sure someone out there probably knows. Let me know. And the next ad is from APX, which is a full-color, full-page ad for Typo Attack and Getaway. Typo Attack was featured on Inversitaski in Season 1, Episode 17. I primarily mention this ad because of Gateway. This is a fantastic game I really enjoyed and one that I had purchased many years ago. Collect the loot and return to the hideout while staying away from the police. There's a complex city map with many opportunities to get busted. It's priced at $29.95, which is $91.08 today, for disc and cassette, and requires 32K of memory. Rob from Player Missile did a full breakdown of the game in his podcast episode 19. He also authored a map editor, which I helped him validate, and I created the first new map for Getaway since its release. Links to all this are in the show notes,
including an image of the Inversitaski Getaway map.
First up in the features is Inside Atari by Gary Yost. This department article is titled Atari Institute and is about the Atari Institute for Educational Action Research, which was chartered by Atari in June of 1981. It provides equipment, advice, and financial support to nonprofit educational organizations. In its first 2 years, it gave grants valued at $1 million plus in Atari computer products and cash. One of the first projects interested me the most. It was the Atari Mobile Computer Van, which brought 15 of these vans to over 8,000 students enrolled in 76 different schools. The vans were outfitted with an Atari computer, disk drive, printer, and color monitor. There are other projects described as well. It's an interesting read to say the least, and a bit of history I didn't know existed. The next feature is Starting Line by Chris Chabrie. This department article is titled Player Missile Tutorial. This is a primer into using player missile graphics from BASIC. It gives an overview of how the system works and a 15-step instruction manual, which also breaks down the sample program. The sample program creates a player resembling a wireframe 3D box that you can move around the screen. A handy table of related player missile memory locations is included, and there are screenshots on the website. The next feature is Atari in the Classroom. This feature article presents several different stories about Atari computers being used in schools, and each story is contributed from different ANTIC article authors. I like the first one, titled Sister Schools by Lee Miller. He describes the Atari Sister School Network, which is a telecommunications networking project funded by Atari Institute for Educational Action Research. This is the second year for the program and includes 10 elementary schools scattered across the U.S. The program equips each school with two Atari 800 systems, peripheral software, and it pays for long-distance charges. Essentially, schools are paired up in a big sister-little sister fashion, which work as a buddy system. This enabled the big sister to answer questions when they arise. Students work two per machine and use BASIC, Pilot, and Logo. Other programs used are Sunburst Factory, Lightning's Master Type, Spinnaker's Story Machine, and APX Teasers by Tobbs. The program's networking software started in-house, grown from a public domain communications package, but later switched to something called the Switch from Picodyne Corporation, which is a combination of hardware and software that utilized 5 channels. Sounds sort of like a MUX to me. Through it, the network computers can run programs simultaneously, conference in real time, as well as one-on-one chat conversations. It also has a bulletin board and allowed for electronic mail. All in all, pretty neat. There's another story titled Miami Does It, written by Richard Herring. He describes the Dade County's commitment to computer education. The school board purchased nearly 1,000 Atari 800s. Some schools also purchased about 300 on their own. The selection of Atari brand was based on price and performance. The program is partially funded through a federal grant. That's a lot of Ataris. I wonder where they all went. The next feature is called Video Games Visit Harvard Yard by Edna Mitchell. This feature article is a report of her findings after attending Harvard's Conference on Video Games and Human Development, which was held at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Edna is herself a professor and head of the Department of Education at Mills College in Oakland, California, and was one of the researchers presenting at the conference. Here, research revolved around the impact of video games on families. The conference included social scientists, educators, medical specialists, and computer industry representatives. It's noted they had a hard time defining the value of video games. There are some interesting perspectives reported from other presentations. The consensus is they all seemed to like video games, but all had cautions and reservations. None found video games particularly harmful, contrary to what they perceived the public wanted to hear. And the overall consensus was that the industry is in the Model A phase and software needs to be developed with a human development perspective. There was a resounding need for more research, with no one suggesting regulation or legislation. The next feature is Pilot Your Atari by Ken Harms. This department article is titled Atari Logo Looking Good. It initially makes the announcement that it will start alternating between Pilot and Logo, starting with this issue. Logo is based on Lisp, and I didn't know that, and has been in development for about 10 years at that point. Atari's logo is the first for the Atari computers, which will come on a 16K cartridge and is slated to be sold for $99.95. It will include a 160-page introduction and 210-page reference manual. The article then describes the language and gives several reasons why to use it and why it's used in education. Namely, it's designed for learning and has a lower entry threshold. It's noted that the Atari package has clear advantages over several competing products on the other platforms, including Apple, TRS, and TI. Did you know that you could call Atari's customer support and talk to a logo specialist? I didn't. In the 80s, I largely passed over logo. I think I may have played around with it once or twice, but never really gave it a lot of attention. When I was doing the Atari 1632 podcast, I had an opportunity to explore Logo and took it. I started with the Atari 8-bit version, then moved to the ST version. I wrote a Guess My Number program on the 8-bit, then ported that over to the ST with minimal modifications. I blogged about that experience on my Unfinished Bitness blog, and there's a link in the show notes to the blog entry which details the program and has some screenshots. And just recently, Randy Kendig of the Antic podcast interviewed Cynthia Solomon, who worked on the design of the Logo language, and Brian Silverman, who worked on the Atari version of Logo. There's a link to that in the show notes as well. The next feature is called Computers in Education by John and Mary Harrison. This feature article discusses the history and application of computers in education and explores where the Atari computer fits in. It demonstrates 3 use cases of computer-aided instruction. First, drill and practice, where information is presented and questions are asked about content. Second, tutorial, which is a variation of drill and practice, the difference being the pace where content is broken into lessons. And third, simulation. This is where the computer presents a real-world situation and gives a student options which the computer translates into effects, which helps the student develop logical reasoning skills. You probably guessed where the Atari fits in. Its audio and visual capabilities can be incorporated to the learning material to help prevent boredom of screens full of text. The computer's power doesn't just help students, it also helps teachers by managing and calculating grades and syllabus material. John and Mary are parents, teachers, and hobby enthusiasts. Mary teaches high school math and computer science, and John has an MS degree in computer science and develops educational software. They will now be coordinating the ANTIC Education Department. As part of this change, ANTIC will focus on the following areas in regards to educational content. 1. Articles discussing how to write or evaluate educational software. 2. Reviews of educational software pointing out strengths and weaknesses. 3. Reintroduction of the kids page, which is by and for children. 4. Educational software by ANTIC readers for other ANTIC readers. And 5. Other articles that reflect the educational uses of computers. They also ask for input from the reader on what the reader wants to see. The next feature is called Object Code to String by Jerry White. This feature article presents a program to take an assembled object file and convert it into a basic string so you can use it within a basic program, calling it with the USR ADR string syntax. It gives an example assembler file to turn the sound off. I compiled this with SynAssembler. Next, you run the Object to String basic program provided. You specify the input object file from the assembler, and then the output file, and a starting line number. It will then generate the basic source, which will allocate memory for the string, define the string, and then return. Your program calls this routine during initialization, then you can use the string whenever needed. I created a short program that turns the sound on for about a second, then calls the string to turn it off. Here's a sound sample, and there are screenshots on the website. The next feature is cover contest winners, and they are announced in a tiny gray box in the corner of a page. John Brooks gets $300, Frank Brandle chose Synapse BlueMax software, and Fred Caprilli chose Synapse BlueMax software as well. Cecilia Gaxiola chose the APX Getaway program, Richard Slater chose the Synapse BlueMax program, Peter Wickman chose Synapse BlueMax software as well, and it seems that BlueMax was quite popular. Both are good games, and I would have picked Getaway, and maybe I'll talk about that in a future episode. And I'm not sure why they listed this in this little gray box in this issue when it was announced in the last issue. The next feature is called Pattern Maker by Frank Roberts. This feature article presents a basic program designed to help you draw repeating patterns. You start with a 25 by 25 empty cell and draw points. Once your design is complete, you can plot it as a pattern or an ink plot. Don't get too busy with your design, though, as it creates some additional plot points inside. Interestingly, it draws the pattern in the same order you drew the pattern. The program is 2 columns and about 3 pages long. It would have been longer, but there was a machine language screen dump routine that was omitted because it was designed for ProWriters and NEC printers only. And here's a fun fact. Frank Roberts is a teacher and software consultant who has written for several computer magazines. He currently develops software for his own company, Kid Stuff Software. Fancy Writer, anyone? Fancy Writer was featured on InVersaTasky in Season 4, Episode 10. Link in the show notes for those that are interested. The next feature is Dragon Smoke by Bob Albrecht and George Firedrake. This department article is titled Fantasy Roles. This time, it presents a program for creating 5-character fantasy role-playing games with a hint to add a vowel at the end to make them more feminine if needed. It also presents their answer to the Rolling Dice program. They present a new challenge by giving a set of data for some characters that are part of their new book titled Adventurer's Handbook, A Beginner's Guide to Role-Playing Games. The challenge is 2 parts. Part 1 is to present the appropriate character's data based on input from the user. Part 2 is to present each character on screen one at a time. And finally, a solution to the positive-negative equal problem is presented, and there's a link to the book that they wrote in the show notes. The next feature is called In the Public Domain by David Plotkin. This department article presents a basic type-in game titled Hooky. This is a Qbert-style game where you control a kid who is skipping school to play on a rock pile. Boy, that sounds fun. Jump from stone to stone to change their color. Watch out for the truant officers and stay on the rock or else you'll end up in reform school. Here is some gameplay sound, and there are some screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Games Department by David Duberman. This department article is titled Artistry in Electronic Gaming. This contains many reviews of five electronic arts games and describes electronic arts as providing software that could change the history of electronic gaming due to the high quality of the audio, visual, and game mechanical aspects of the games. The games discussed are Archon, Murder on the Zindernoff, Pinball Construction Set, Mule, and Worms. Check marks all across for me, but I don't recall ever playing Murder on the Zindernoff. Did you know you can spend $5 today and get a version of Mule that plays natively on Mac, Windows, and Linux, and uses the original game engine? In addition to standalone play, you can play against your friends through the internet. It's a lot of fun, and there's a link in the show notes. The next feature is called Tape Topics by Vern Mastel. This department article is titled Card File for Cassette. This is a self-described electronic card file handy database filing program for Atari users with cassette recorders. It's written in BASIC and needs 16K RAM. It's pretty weak by my standards, but might get you by if you don't have a disk and have very basic needs. It can process up to 30 records or cards, with titles of up to 15 characters in length. Each card can have 10 lines of text, each 30 characters long. It includes search and print functions as well. The database itself is stored on and retrieved from cassette. Screenshots and a printout on the website. The next feature is called Microscreens by Mike Sullivan. This article is not indexed as a primary article, but does appear in the index. This is three graphic screens created with a program called Color Magic from International Software Marketing. A version of this is also sold by Epix as Fun with Art. Mike is a graphic artist by trade and works for the company that makes the program. This program allows painting with 128 colors all at once. There is a picture of a medieval knight in combat, which was used to demonstrate the program's power to Epix. And there is also a landscape picture, which shows a lot of fine detail. And last is an image called Giant at Home, which is from the story Jack and the Beanstalk. I especially like the landscape picture, and you should check these out. The next feature is called Fourth Factory by Thomas McNamee. This department article is titled Fourth Assembler. The article instructs you on how to use assembly language within Fourth, how to use vertical blank interrupts within Forth, and how to combine the two. There is an example program that is not too long. I could not figure out how to get it to load in Val Forth or APX Extended Fig Forth. I clearly don't understand enough about the language yet. I think these Forth articles could benefit from basic usage instruction of the presented content. The next feature is called Assembly Language by Ed and Jeff Schneider. This department article is titled Binary Autoload. This presents an Atari assembler editor program that can be used on a diskette to present a menu and load a binary program with a single keystroke. It matches all files with .obj extension. The listing is 2.5 pages long, and the resultant program takes 7 sectors of disk space. The next feature is called Antic Pix Books, and that's P-I-X. This feature article is a variation of the Antic Picks 10 articles that have appeared before. In this one, instead of programs, it's books, 10 of them. They are Programming Your Atari Computer by Mark Thompson, Basic Exercises for the Atari by L.P. Lamotier, Mapping the Atari by Ian Chadwick. This is a must-have book. Day Ray Atari by Amy Shin, Chris Crawford, Jim Dunyan, Bob Fraser, and Lane Winner. This is another must-have book. The Book of Atari Software, 1983, by Jeff Stanton, Robert P. Wells, and Sandra Rokowanski. I Speak Basic to My Atari by Aubrey B. Jones, Jr. Atari Sound and Graphics by Herb Moore, Judy Lower, and Bob Albrecht. Atari Programming with 55 Programs by Linda M. Schreiber. Kids and the Atari by Edward H. Carlson. Your Atari Computer by Lon Poole with Martin McNiff and Stephen Cook. Links to all these books are in the show notes. In the new products realm, first we have Suncom Incorporated, which has released a new game controller called the Aerobics Joystick. You can keep fit while playing your favorite games. This controller works for the 2600 and the computers alike. It is installed into a stationary exercise bike in as little as 10 minutes. It's stated to work best with Activision's Enduro game. There is a picture which shows a woman on a stationary bike holding a joystick between the handlebars. It's too dark to see how it's all hooked up. There is a 2600 in front of her and the Enduro screen. The price is $39.95, which is $121.49 today. Next, and this one is for Rob from the Player Missile podcast and Kay from the Antic podcast, Epix has released Jumpman. 5 difficulties and 30 levels to keep you playing a long time. Defuse the bombs while avoiding obstacles and outwitting the enemies. It comes on disc, requires 32K of memory, and is priced at $39.95, which again is $121.49 today. For those that don't know, Rob and Kay reverse-engineered Jumpman. The project culminated in the creation of Omnivore, which includes a level editor for Jumpman. Rob's Player Missile website has a couple of pages related to Jumpman and Omnivore that are very interesting to read. The Jumpman page has a link to an interview with Randy Glover, Jumpman's creator. It has a slew of other links as well, including a video from Kay that shows how to use Omnivore to create a level. There are links for that in the show notes. There are a couple of miscellaneous items to talk about. In the product review section is a product that was mentioned in the ad section back in episode 7, which was April 83, volume 2, number 1. This is for the Micro Mainframe. Here's a short recap of the features. It's a single or double density disk drive that can have up to 2 drives installed and supports up to 8 through an expansion. Those expansion drives can be any ANSI compliant 3-inch, 5.25-inch, or 8-inch drives. It has a 4K print spooler and Centronics parallel port built in. It also has a Z80 processor with 16K RAM, which is expandable to 64K. It can run CPM, TRS-DOS, MaxiDOS, and OASIS software. It has a few extra utility commands, PRT TRK, which prints any track to the screen or the printer, and PRT SEC, which does the same but for a sector. It says the drive is about 3 inches longer than an Atari 810. It also states that you shouldn't worry about who MMF is, and MMF is Micro Mainframe, because they have been the largest manufacturer of TRS-80 peripherals for over 4 years. The reviewer is very happy with the product. There is also a picture of it, albeit it's black and white. And last, there is also a review of Bank Street Rider from Broderbund. They sum it up as a really good first word processor for someone new to the Atari. This product was featured on InVersaTasky in Season 6, Episode 1, and there's a link in the show notes. It's time for some feedback. I got a message from Paradroid on Southern Amos BBS regarding the last episode, number 11, who writes, "Just listened to it earlier tonight. It was another great one. I'm constantly amazed by how much some of this stuff cost back then when adjusting for inflation, especially some of the side items like acoustic printer stands. Thanks for taking the time to provide positive feedback, and I'm glad that you enjoy it. I too am often shocked when I see just how much some of these items were, and it's no wonder many of us were virtually forced to pirate software and build our own desks. If you have a story or experience with Antic or one of the products mentioned, I'd like to hear it. I'd also like to hear how you're liking the Antic Files. Let me know. Thanks again to Zane Little for the track The Cool Factor from the album Another Bag of Chips, which is used in the opening sequence. And thank you for continuing to listen and support me.